Hello and welcome to the Majlis podcast by Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, your host here in Washington, D.C. It's been almost a year since Shavkat Mirziyoyev assumed presidency in Uzbekistan. Since then, though, much remains the same, but recent signs, particularly involving Mirziyoyev's efforts to connect with his neighbors, change in Uzbekistan's position on Rogan Dame, and most recently, possibility of BBC's Uzbek service and Human Rights Watch resuming their work in Uzbekistan are the biggest of all. But the question is, how serious are these steps? On this episode of Majlis, we hope to bring some clarity on this topic. Before we get into the discussion, let's welcome our guests. I'm joined from Washington by Ambassador John Herbst, former U.S. Ambassador to Uzbekistan, who's currently head of the Atlantic Council's Dino Patricio Euro-Asia Center. Steve Swerdlow is joining us today from California, who's the Central Asia researcher at the Human Rights Watch, and Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog called Kushlak Owazi. Gentlemen, welcome to the Majlis.
Thank you.
Very nice to have you. So, Steve, tell us more. BBC's Uzbek service seems to be returning to Uzbekistan as they are officially hiring a reporter in Tashkent. Human Rights Watch got some sort of indication in response to its inquiries to resume its work. Tell us more about this, please. What is really happening?
The question I think everyone wants to know is it a Tashkent spring? Certainly no one, I think, would have predicted a year ago that some of the news that we've been seeing recently would be happening. We saw news just yesterday about discussions at a high level, perhaps scrapping exit visas for Uzbek citizens leaving the country, which would be a major step forward if it actually happens. And certainly, I wouldn't be alone among observers watching with great interest the press conference that Foreign Minister Kamilov gave just about a week ago now, where he not only made some statements about the return of international organizations, reporters, and human rights groups to the country, but also actually took questions from journalists, as far as I understand, at the end of that press conference. As far as I know, the news on the BBC is certainly remarkable. If you would have independent journalists able to do their job on the ground, and I think that's the real test, that would be a major step forward for freedom of expression, freedom of speech, and many other things in Uzbekistan, and opening of civil society. We're watching closely to see what happens. In terms of Human Rights Watch, I can't speculate yet on the actual intentions of the government or what may be happening behind the scenes. I can say that Human Rights Watch, as it does in many other countries, works on the ground independently. And we, of course, want to be in Uzbekistan and able to work where we haven't been able to do so for the last 7 years, but even before that, after the Andijan massacre, it became increasingly difficult for our representatives to get accreditation. So we did watch with interest that the foreign minister said that the doors would be open, and we'll see. And of course, we want to be in the country and hopefully go back as soon as possible, and we're making efforts to pursue that. But of course, there were some caveats that Kamilov mentioned, which I think he struck tones or notes that we've heard in the past, which is that in order for organizations to work in Uzbekistan, they have to respect national traditions. He said, we have our own conception of democracy and democratic development. And in order to work in the country, one would have to avoid interference. I think the phrase was interference in any of the internal affairs of the country. That's a pretty large caveat. So I think, again, the question is, what does that translate into on the ground? Even if delegations can take pay visits to Uzbekistan, will they be able to freely and independently, without interference, work and collect information and do their job? And the same should be true, of course, for local human rights monitors that live in Uzbekistan.
Steve, so far I heard from you is the closest into possibility of you returning to Uzbekistan is that Kamilov said he would be open for international organizations like Human Rights Watch. What was your interpretation of that specific word?
It's hard to speculate on exactly what that translates to, but we have contacted the Uzbek government since President Mirziyoyev was elected and stated that we, as we do in more than 90 countries, we want to be present in Uzbekistan. We want to have the ability to carry out our work. Of course, we used to have an office there between 1996 and 2011 when our office registration was liquidated by the Supreme Court. So we want to see the government engage with us, allow us to visit the country and work just the same way that we do in every other country. And we'll have to see if this translates to, you know, the actual ability to go. So those statements, I think, were a surprise to many, including to us. And it's obviously, I think, in the context of the foreign ministry, and Ambassador Herbst can speak to this better than I can, it is pretty remarkable that this press conference happened and the things that were said. But I have to mention that I think was very notable that came out of that discussion was that Foreign Minister Kamilov again denied the existence of political prisoners. And so he balanced what he said about BBC and Human Rights Watch. And so we'll have to see again what the commitment is to allow reporters and journalists to work independently.
Okay, let's get to Ambassador John Herbst. So what does you really understand from this? It appears Steve kind of saying, yeah, bad kind of words. So what is your understanding of what is happening today in Tashkent?
I was in Dushanbe a couple of weeks ago.
Right.
And I had a chance to talk with many people there. And one of my interlocutors who I asked about changes in Uzbekistan said, yes, I believe changes are coming, but carefully. And I cite that because that is kind of the way I look at it. A number of interesting and potentially very important things have occurred since last fall. A clear good neighbor policy offensive being the most important of them, but also some discussion of easing of fairly tight controls within Uzbekistan itself has been on the table. And I think that the speech and the press conference, Minister Kamilov, is one more sign of this. Things have been very tightly controlled within Uzbekistan, and relations with the neighbors have been strained, but steps have been taken in both areas, which promise, I think, very good things. But this is Uzbekistan, and chances are this will move slowly.
Bruce, you were one of our colleagues in Prague who went to Uzbekistan really in early days of its independence. Since then, your way to Uzbekistan is blocked. Now, when you hear news like possibility of BBC's Uzbek service returning, it is yet still a possibility. And just you heard Steve saying that they are still trying to understand what really this means to Human Rights Watch's possibility to resume its work in Tashkent. And, you know, still we are talking about, you know, in terms of possibilities. Doesn't sound in some ways like a kind of PR from Tashkent's perspective, or they really have intention to open up?
Well, I think certainly you'd have to greet any statement about, even considerations of allowing BBC and Human Rights Watch back into the country. It's already further than they've gone in several years. Obviously, and as Steve pointed out, there's still quite a few hurdles that have to be overcome here. One, I know that HRW's chief is going to go visit there, and that, you know, so this is like a meeting to sort of break the ice or something, I guess, and see if it is possible. But of course, this whole idea, you know, I mean, the criteria that they laid down already, that Kamilov laid down about having to respect Uzbekistan's customs and traditions, and, you know, I mean, we've heard this kind of stuff before. It basically translated in the past to don't say anything bad about our government that we don't want to hear, and you'll be able to work, you know, more or less within the country. So that policy hasn't changed too much. But you know, again, just the fact that they've opened up the door a little bit and mentioned that there is a possibility for groups like BBC and HRW, and we hope, of course, RFERL too, sometime to return to Uzbekistan and do some kind of reporting is at least a start. And of course, you know, like I said, I just have to welcome that wholeheartedly that we've made, you know, it seems like a little step, but considering the situation in the last few years, it's actually, to me, from where I'm sitting, it looks like a big leap forward.
Ambassador, so what is your take on this? What really the Uzbek authorities are trying to achieve by this?
I believe that there's an understanding in at least some influential circles in Tashkent that their policy, especially towards their neighbors, was not yielding strong, good results for the country, and that there's a need to improve relationships with all the countries in the area, in Central Asia. That's needed for economic reasons in particular, but perhaps also just for general cultural and political reasons. Yeah. I think as well that the country has been tightly bound since independence, although there have been periods of greater opening and then periods of greater closing. And there's been a sense that there's a time now to explore what gains might be made by opening things up, at least a little bit, and then seeing the results. And if the results are deemed good, then opening them up some more.
Steve, I understand in terms of Human Rights Watch's possibility of return to Uzbekistan, you're kind of saying, okay, let's wait and see what happens. But in that light, there has been several other developments in Uzbekistan which kind of regarded as a positive in recent days. Walk us through some of the other developments that you get from Uzbekistan recently.
Right. I mean, I think, when you speak with a wide spectrum of Uzbeks abroad and in the country, those working, in the arena of sort of civil society and politics and those far from it, what I've been hearing almost uniformly is at least let's say a sense of relief that something potentially good, again, I put caveats on that.
Yeah.
But I think something good is happening as a lot of Uzbeks see it, in the sense that, from the highly symbolic gesture of even addressing the nation on TV on New Year's Eve, Mirzoyev making that address, which Karimov never did, sort of reaching out to the people, connecting with citizens in a way that Karimov never did, to things like the press conference that we saw and the discussion that exit visas may be lifted, perhaps, although there's no clear evidence that's going to happen. I think a lot of people that watch the country, follow the country, and from the country are heartened by this sense that, as Ambassador Herb said, there seems to be a pragmatic understanding on the part of the government that something needs to change. We have seen the releases of, depending on how you count it, between 5 and 6 political prisoners, 5 from prison, 1 from 4 psychiatric treatment. That was actually Karimov's nephew. But as I've said in the past, those political prisoners that were released were not released early. They were released at the end of their terms. They were all elderly individuals. And you still have dozens of secular activists in prison who, I would think that one of the measures that we should be watching really closely over the next few months, with the September Independence Day holiday coming up and the amnesty attached to that, would be whether or not more releases will come of political prisoners. But another thing that we saw in May was we saw the visit by the High Commissioner for Human Rights, first visit of that sort in 12 years, first visit ever by a High Commissioner for Human Rights to Uzbekistan, but the first visit of a high-level human rights official in at least 12 years. So that was very significant. Of course, you saw the ODIHR team from OSCE, the EBRD coming to visit with officials in Tashkent. But on the human rights front, again, having journalists at that press conference indicated that perhaps there's a little bit more space for discussing sensitive topics. We've been watching call-in shows and talk shows on Uzbek TV start to inch closer to criticism of policies in place. You've seen discussion of economic problems that you haven't seen earlier. So again, that's still on the level, I would say, more of the general atmosphere. But on the most meaningful human rights benchmarks, ending torture, opening up for the Red Cross, allowing journalists and local monitors to do their job, we haven't seen that. And I should also just mention that, Human Rights Watch just put out a report about forced labor in the cotton industry about 2 weeks ago. And, we see no indications yet of a change on the forcing of adults to pick cotton en masse. So there's a lot that needs to happen, but there are definitely things that are positive steps.
Mm-hmm. Ambassador Herbers, these changes, these developments, let's say, how much they are connected to each other? Like Steve mentioned, release of few political prisoners, although they reached to the end of their terms in jail, but and also the possibility, I keep saying possibility, of BBC Uzbek services return to Uzbekistan, and also let me mention the change in position of Uzbekistan on Rogondim. How much these steps are interconnected to each other?
Well, they are certainly all connected. They certainly all represent, again, a sense among the current leadership that there needs to be at least some easing of tensions with the neighbors, improvement of relations, and easing of tension or controls within society. But I would still distinguish among the different elements. Authoritarian regimes always release political prisoners as gestures of this or that. So they're not, it's not an unimportant gesture, but it's almost business as usual. The other things all represent turn in a direction, in some cases, which a direction they'd been at before. I mean, you used to have Human Rights Watch, and you used to have BBC, and you used to have NDI and IRI in Uzbekistan, then they were tossed out. But this will be a return to the Uzbekistan of a more open variety, although still not very open by our lights. I think the new position on the Rogan Dam is perhaps the most interesting, because this represents a change in a more liberal and I think a better direction regarding water sharing. And the Uzbeks have not really been there before, or at least not this far, as this current position suggests, although here too it's tentative. But again, what we're seeing is within an Uzbek concept, in a context, an across-the-board willingness to ease, albeit, again, very cautiously.
Right, right. Thank you very much, Ambassador Herbst. All these developments seems to be really interesting, but as similarity is so striking, in many cases one wants to say that we have seen this movie in the past in Turkmenistan, in early days of President Berdimuhamedov, after the death of Niyazov. But with one difference, that in Turkmenistan's case, we have not seen Ashgabat extending an invitation to Western media organizations to resume their work, nor did Human Rights Watch was contacted by Ashgabat. But still, how big of deal is this? What is the end game? What we should expect happening next? We will continue the conversation discussing these and many other questions shortly. Hey everyone, before we get into the second part of the show, just a quick reminder that if you really like Mejlis podcast, there's a real chance that you will also like my other radio show that's called Gandhara Podcast. The show discusses latest developments in Pakistan and Afghanistan from local perspective. And the podcast is published in every second week on Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Gandhara website. It's a totally must-follow discussion for foreign policy nerds with interest in the region. First, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast, we are trying to understand the recent unusual signs that are coming from Uzbekistan and what does this mean. Joining me in the conversation are Ambassador John Herbst, head of the Atlantic Council's Dino Patricio Eurasia Center. Formerly, he was the U.S. ambassador to Uzbekistan. Steve Severtlo, Central Asia researcher at the Human Rights Watch, and Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia blog called Kishlak Awazi. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis here in Washington, D.C. Welcome back, gentlemen, to the Majlis. So, Steve, to start with you, you got the invitation. From your point of view, from Human Rights Watch point of view, how big of breakthrough is this?
Well, you know, I think we try to see our role and what happens with Human Rights Watch, again, as just one factor of part of a larger human rights picture. And as I said, we've been engaging, as we do, with governments across the world. We, you know, early on, I think it was actually on the first day of Mirzoyev's presidency, we sent an open letter in which we laid out priorities that we think that he should make changes on. And by the way, I think you know, for this discussion, it's important that international actors and the U.S. and the EU and institutions also really push hard now, given the momentum that we're seeing on these issues, to make human rights changes. But what we asked for was the release of political prisoners. And, you know, we understand that beyond, let's say, the 30 or 40 or 50 well-known cases, there are thousands of those that have been imprisoned on charges, very vague charges of extremism and terrorism. Those are problematic trials that often lacked evidence. And one of our suggestions to President Mirziyoyev was set up a mechanism for looking again at this large population of people that you've deemed extremists, because both from a human rights perspective and from a security perspective, that's in your interests. And we did see, I should mention, the UN Special Rapporteur on Freedom of Religion is set probably to be perhaps the next UN human rights official that would be extended in an actual invitation to visit the country. And we've seen some discussions about, as Ambassador Herbst said, maybe easing in the sphere of religion and allowing those that have been branded as followers of underground movements or attendees of mosques that have fallen out of favor, an attempt to engage with them rather than necessarily imprison them. And we're watching closely to see what happens with that. Mm-hmm. But you know, we laid out all of these issues, and one of them, of course, was the ability of international human rights organizations and local activists to do their job. We don't know even yet whether there will be a visit by anyone from Human Rights Watch, I should say. I wouldn't exactly call it an invitation, but we're certainly acting on what we heard, and you know, we would like to be there as soon as possible. And you know, again, we'll have to see what it's like for folks like us on the ground. As Ambassador Herbst said, I think it's still an authoritarian regime in which the activities of NGOs will be controlled very closely. And you know, what we hear from some of our partners in international organizations that are there, or I should say more diplomatic institutions, that the Ministry of Justice is still, you know, a very restrictive body of the government that will issue accreditation in accordance with, you know, political decisions. And yeah. So we would hope that there would be some effort to reform that whole process, that registration for local activists, that human rights activity not be de facto illegal anymore, but that there be an attempt to allow activists to register, to gain some legal status, and to conduct operations and activities without prior approval of the authorities for anything they do.
Mm-hmm. Bruce, I wanted to get back to you with this question a little bit earlier. Given the type of changes that you have seen so far in Uzbekistan, who seem to be the real target audience here?
Well, that is a good question. You know, clearly the people of Uzbekistan, to some extent, are the recipients of this message a little bit, because we know that there is a little bit more room for reporting domestically out there. The international community, without a doubt. But even then, I would caution that although Mirziyoyev and other Uzbek officials who are there now since Mirziyoyev took over have said a lot of good things, if you look at how many of their words have translated into actions, it's really relatively few. I give them credit for talking about greater cooperation regionally with people further abroad. But that's really the level that we're at is talk. So we don't know. And I think part of what the government is trying to do, because we know the situation in Uzbekistan economically, certainly, is pretty bad. And they have the model of Turkmenistan next door where, basically the economy is failed on them and they're in heavy, deep in crisis right now. And so they can look just across their border and see that could be them if they don't make some kind of changes. Admittedly, the socioeconomic conditions are a little bit different between the two countries, but there is an example of what happens if you let these things go too far. And so, we've seen the Uzbek government reach out to the West. They've reached out to their traditional partners, Russia, China. To some extent, they're improving regional ties. So internationally, yes, the message is getting across that Uzbekistan is, to some extent, opening up and willing to engage people. And I would suggest that they're probably trying to see which of these relationships they can profit from the best in the near future, and that, a year from now, they will have worked some of this out, and we'll see them leaning one way or another toward different countries a lot more strongly than we do now.
Mm. Let's bring on Ambassador Herbert Stew here. As Bruce was saying that, certainly at least some steps or some messages that were given from Tashkent so far is directed to international community. If that is your thinking, how the international community, especially Washington, is responding to that so far?
Well, I think the West was an important target audience, although not the only one.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, looking at Washington, you have a national security apparatus which is still not functioning in a normal or proper way. So there's obviously no Assistant Secretary of State for South and Central Asia who would normally take the lead on something like this. And so I think maybe the U.S. But having said that, there are people in the bureaucracy who know the situation in Central Asia well. And I think the response on the part of the United States has been largely positive, as it should be.
Steve, your take?
Yeah, I would agree that, I think people from opposite ends of the spectrum with regard to Uzbekistan's positions on human rights. I mean, I'm thinking now of our friend and scholar, Fred Starr, I think recently wrote an op-ed about the need to engage now with Uzbekistan, given what's going on. And I would say, even though we're often in differing camps on human rights issues, I would say, along with what Ambassador Herbst just mentioned, that this is a time when international actors need to be out front, taking full advantage of whatever they can of these changes on the ground, and say there are benchmarks, there are criteria. In fact, when the Andijan massacre happened, there were sanctions put on Uzbekistan for X, Y, and Z. This is what we want to see. This is what we have to happen in order to advance this relationship. So it seems that the discussions about currency convertibility, which is another aspect we haven't touched on here, which would be a huge economic sea change. Were that to come about, it would probably, create more fertile ground for investments and businesses to come. And I think that there should be an understanding in Brussels, in Washington, other places, in Berlin, that, as Bruce said, it's been mostly talk. and there should be meaningful steps taken in order to advance and deepen the bilateral relationships and the larger relationships economically with Uzbekistan.
Okay. So, Stephen, Bruce, both of you are saying that they are so far, most of these are just talks. So what are the parameters that we should look for to measure Uzbekistan is really taking serious steps in a positive direction in terms of real reforms, Bruce?
Well, you know, how this conversation started is one indication. Will they actually let the BBC get back into Uzbekistan? And what kind of latitude would such a reporter or correspondent have to go out and carry out his duties without any encountering any obstacles? And the same with Steve's organization. If they can get back into the country and are allowed to, which in itself would be, I would say, very significant. But at that point, will they be able to go out and meet with people, you know, with people who are considered opposition in Uzbekistan, with people who are forced labor in the cotton fields, things like that? I mean, that would be one of the first big steps towards showing that, yes, we're relaxing some controls and we're more willing to cooperate, you know. And then from there, I suppose, you know, there's a lot of organizations it would be nice to see get back into Uzbekistan. You know, as other people have pointed out a while ago, in the 1990s, if you'd been in Tashkent, all the major international organizations were based in Tashkent. And now none of them are, practically. And so, you know, just that idea of re-engaging and allowing various organizations to open shop again, the National Democratic Institute, Human Rights Watch, you know, BBC, RFERL, people like that from outside, because really the whole purpose of this was institution building in the 1990s, and it got scrapped because of paranoia on the part of the Uzbek government. So I would say that would be, if I saw that happen, international, you know, NGOs, foreign-based NGOs opening shop again in Uzbekistan, allowed to work fairly freely, I would be encouraged.
Okay. Unfortunately, we have to conclude the discussion. Let's do that with this point, Ambassador Herbst. So from your point of view, what should be the indication to measure the seriousness of Uzbekistan in this?
Look, it's clear that they are trying to move forward, again, very slowly. I don't think the idea is for us to say, well, if they do X, they're serious. They do Y, they're not serious. I think what we should be doing is encouraging to take all these steps. Just about everything we've discussed, the things they've already done before, with the exception of a real easing of, for example, trade and other relations with their neighbors. But we should be encouraging them across the board. And we should not be there as a schoolmarm saying, well, you've done X, but you haven't done Y, therefore shame on you. We should be just trying to work with them, promising them closer engagement as they do more positive things, and seeing what can happen.
Okay. Steve, a final point from your side?
Yeah, just to add to what's been said, I agree with what Bruce and Ambassador Herbst have mentioned in terms of what we want to see. And I also agree that, you know, this is an organic process. It's going to take some time. I would, of course, just want to underline that some of these changes, some of these human rights improvements could be handled immediately. They're, you know, we could call them low-hanging fruit. We could say that they are things that, especially in an authoritarian system, can be handled with the stroke of a pen. So what I mean by that is activists like Dilmurod Said, of the reporter who has been in prison with tuberculosis for now 12 years, and so many others could be released tomorrow. Forced labor. I think there's been so much work on that issue, and there's so much engagement already by the international community. I do think Mirziyoyev could, you know, establish a decree just absolutely prohibiting forced labor. So there are advantages, one can say, to an authoritarian system in the sense that things can be changed quickly. So I do think we should push as hard as we can for those sorts of things to happen. Those things absolutely urgently need to happen, because we have seen a human rights defender who died in prison just last year ago who's disappeared. We also saw earlier reports, again, in this period of easing of restrictions, we saw the death of another human rights lawyer who couldn't leave the country because she needed medical care. We've seen people like the world's longest journalist, Mohammed Bikjanov, not be able to leave the country. So we want to see those things happen quickly. So there should be a strong effort to encourage those reforms, but also continue to call out the abuses that are still happening on the ground.
Okay. Thank you very much for your insights, Steve Severlo, Central Asia researcher at the Human Rights Watch, and Ambassador John Herbert, head of the Atlantic Council's Dino Patricio Eurasia Center, formerly U.S. Ambassador to Uzbekistan, and Bruce Panier, editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Central Asia blog called Kishlag Awazi, for your time in touch today.
Thank you.
And this is it from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.